So, Michelle, what's more horrifying to you, drinking a cup of VM Varga's wiener water or French kissing him?
I think I'd have to drink the cup.
Pretty scary stuff, huh?
It was so bad. It's just really, really bad. This guy he's crazy, right? I mean, he's literally mad.
I think he's totally smart. He's some sort of cosmic agent, though, I think. He's a Anton Chigurh or somebody kind of mysterious that's not really real, like a Melvo or, you know, something freaky.
I think so, too. I think he's otherworldly in some way. I think he hinted to that a couple times in this episode.
That's a good adjective for it. So, Michelle from Tennessee, this is West Coast Project and our podcast on Fargo, number six. The Lord of No Mercy.
Could you find anything on that? Because I could find nothing.
Yeah, Lord had no mercy showing us close-ups of those teeth, man.
Well, that was some rough stuff. This was a sad. It was sad. It was a really good episode. What'd you think?
Yeah, it was good. I think they did what they had to do, though. They had to move some people out and move some stuff ahead, and now some things are really set up to be super interesting.
I think so too. But it was. There were several things in this that was hard to watch. I pointed out in episode 5 about how hard it was to watch that scene with Nikki and how she was getting beat on and everything. And then in this one, we actually saw more of it. It was more graphic and it was terrible. And that combined with VMV's digging around in his nasty gum line.
Yeah, literally. Not dicking around, gumming around. Dicking around was last week. So, Michelle, we had some mysteries. Digging. We had some mysteries with the answers right in front of us. I think I figured one of them out. And maybe it's not a mystery if you're paying attention. A lot of listeners may already know this. But remember we were talking about how many stamps there were?
Uh-huh.
And I think there were 24. And the reason I think that is because the logo, the image for the show, is the book of stamps, and there are 24 stamps.
Oh, that's pretty smart.
They're actually.
Did you come up with that?
Yeah, I just thought of it. I'm looking at it. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm going to count those. And there's 30 stamps, but the 6 in the middle are just the big Fargo name.
Okay.
So there's each individual stamp around the 6 in the middle is of a different thing. So I thought I'd go through them really quick just to talk about them.
Sure.
So if you look at the logo, the one in the upper, I'll go upper left and then across to the right in each row.
Okay.
So the one in the upper left is a semi-trailer truck.
Okay.
The one next to that is the mounted elk head.
Yeah.
The one next to that is a broken air conditioner.
Oh, okay. Yeah, lots of clues in this. How have we missed it?
The one next to the broken air conditioner is the computer screen.
Yep.
Which Gloria never deals with. But who got thrown off the parking garage?
Irv.
Irv, yeah.
Yeah.
The one next to that's the tree.
That's like a tree of life tree, or kind of looks like.
In the second row, the one on the left is the Eden Valley like traffic sign, highway sign.
Yep.
Then Gloria next to that.
Yep.
Then Sisyphus.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And Sisyphus is the stamp that Emmett had, the one he kept. And then next to that, Thaddeus holding the cane over Zimmerman or Zuckerberg or whatever his name was.
You're right. Okay, yeah.
Next one is an Eden Valley police badge.
Right.
Then in the third row, it's Santa Claus. Saw Santa Claus before in the convention.
Well, Santa Claus, right. And then, you know, this whole thing is set at Christmas time. We even heard more Christmas music in this episode, so.
Then we got the Fargo logo in the middle, and the one on the far right is a police cruiser. Then in the fourth row, we got the Corvette. got the Fargo logo again. Then on the right is a tied up guy that's gagged, which is probably Ennis.
I don't know. I don't know who that is. It's a 45-cent stamp, though, so it's pretty high up there for what these are.
Technically, I guess that could be something we haven't seen yet. Because Ennis wasn't technically gagged. He was glued.
Huh. Yeah, okay. I don't know.
Next one is Maurice holding the gun on Ray and Nikki in the bathtub. Row 5.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
Then we have a globe, like a planet with a spaceship above it.
Was that... No, that wasn't the award that Thaddeus got, right?
I'm thinking it might be a cover of one of his sci-fi books.
Okay.
Then the one next to that is very mysteriously blank. It's just like a stamp's been taken away. It's just a blank square.
Okay. The one next to that that I'm looking at says 419 and FX, which was the start date of Fargo. So maybe the photo you're looking at was before they had the start date.
Or maybe they just needed that space to put the dates on it.
Right.
So the one next to the blank one is a guy texting on a phone.
We know that's probably Mimo. It's how he goes around with his phone in his face all the time.
Next to that is a guy falling. The guy, computer guy, probably off the garage roof.
Yeah, Irv taking a dive.
Then the bottom row on the left is the urine sample.
Yeah.
Emmett's house next to that.
Yep.
Two handguns. I couldn't place the two handguns somewhere yet, so maybe that's coming up.
That's a good point.
Then we got a cart, like a bridge hand, somebody holding a hand of cards. And then the final one is 2 feet with 2 different shoes, like Ray changing his shoes because of pee being all over him.
Okay, I see more stamps.
You see more below that?
Yeah, there's more below that. I can't. It's like they're cut off in this photo that I have.
That's because the image is a reflection. So if you look at that closely, it's the reflection of the bottom row in reverse.
Huh.
If you had a shiny table and you set something on it, you would see the reflection on the shiny table of what the thing is.
Okay. Okay, it could be. That's not what it really looks like here, but the way it's pulled up on mine is kind of weird. But
anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. So if people are listening, if they're interested, it might be kind of fun to just look at and see that stuff.
Yeah, that is. That's really, really cool. I cannot believe that's been like right here in front of our eyes this whole time, and I have not even paid attention to it. That's a great catch.
And the reason that I think it's important, because I think there were 20-some stamps that they talked about. I thought it was more than 24. I thought it was like 28. So maybe these Fargo ones that are covered up by the logo represent some of them. But I think it was in the 20s, you know, the inheritance that Emmett got.
Yeah, I think so, too. That rings a true bell to me, 20-something stamps. And that's the one... The Sisyphus stamp is the one he has left. Yeah.
But now the Varga has it, and Mimo.
Yeah. I guess they do. I didn't even think about that. Emmett didn't take it, did he?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I couldn't find anything about a book or a symphony or a movie or anything about the Lord of No Mercy specifically. Everything you looked up on it was just relating back to this Fargo thing. But
isn't the one and only Lord? I guess if you take the Western vision of the Lord, a Lord of No Mercy in some people's eyes?
Well, there was a lot of, like, religious, you know, things to it. A lot of people were saying, like, if you Google that, you'll get a lot of things where people take things, but the words are, like, out of order and stuff. So I couldn't find anything specific to those exact words in that order. But, so...
Isn't it kind of the philosophy of people that suffer a tragedy, though? Like, there's a Lord, but the Lord has no mercy. Like, an infant dies or some stupid accident. People blame the Lord for stuff.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that, but I don't know how we could relate that to this show, this episode, really, specifically, anyway. I was really looking for some kind of, relation to... I mean, when you think about the Lord of the Manor or whatever you're thinking about, I was thinking about Emmett, and I was thinking that, and maybe that is what they're talking about here, because of what ends up happening when he does go to give Ray back the stamp and do, like, the right thing. It ends up being no mercy for Ray, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's just so ironic how they end up over such stupid things. They lose so much benefit that they could have just had by being nice to each other.
Yeah. And it was so sweet and it was so believable to me in such a flukish kind of way that something like that could happen. And so sad that it would happen, not when they're angry. I mean, they were obviously bickery, but when they were trying to make it right, and then that happened, that just made it even more sad to me.
Yeah, and I think the lesson is never too late to make it right. Like, Ray thought it was too late. Oh, this is too late. You got to admit that I deserve this from them. Like, that's stupid. That was just petty.
Yeah, they made Ray as unlikable, I guess, as they could at that moment without it just being ridiculous, but they made me as a viewer get frustrated with Ray.
Do you think Ewan McGregor gets his paycheck cut in half now that Ray's dead?
I bet he does. What do you think?
I bet he probably gets two credits. He's doing two jobs. He's playing two characters.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He may still have to don the Ray suit for, autopsies or who knows what. Who knows?
Well, it's an easy suit for him to don.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
All right, so, Michelle, you want to jump into it?
I'm ready. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, we begin this episode. The intro starts right at the beginning. They're not playing around, no chicanery, no tomfoolery. They just jump right into it on this, like with the first scene. And it was really cool because they showed the blinds on the door. And the way they did that was it was like nighttime. And then it felt like morning was coming through the blinds. And it got brighter and brighter. And then they pan down and we see Ray sitting there at the table. Like he's just been sitting there all night long thinking about what he needs to do and what he wants to do. And then he starts thinking back about what Nikki had told him about what happened. And she said it was two guys, a Russian and some kind of Oriental. They drove a late model Cadillac, but she didn't get the license. And I thought that was kind of telling because who even thinks like that? I mean, to think when you're beaten silly, I wouldn't even think that I hadn't got the license.
Well, tag. I don't know. I guess it's reasonable. She was trying to help him figure out who did it.
Well, sure. But I just think it's almost like a criminal's way of thinking, trying to find identifying things on the people. Because I don't think that just your average Joe would even think about, you know, you may want to describe, I don't know, you might think, well, I didn't get the license, but I mean, she was literally face down in the muck over there. But we see her walking and she's putting a shirt on and she's a mess and she's bruised and really hurt. And I had a question for you here. Why do you think they would leave her alive? What was the point of that? Because in this very episode, not even like 45 minutes later, from last episode, VMV's telling them to kill her.
Well, they didn't know who she was when they beat her up.
Oh, you don't think they knew?
I don't think so.
Okay.
They were acting as free agents, Mimo and Yuri, at the time. Okay, maybe they're not allowed to kill people without the go-ahead green light from VM Varga, too. Maybe, you know.
Okay, I can buy that. But I just had, like, a flashback to the Americans and Pastor Tim and why she was left alive to begin with. You know, if they were just going to go after her. But that makes more sense. But then we go back to those clips of the scenes of her being beaten from a different and closer and more personal angle. It was really bad.
Yeah, we had to relive it.
Yeah, we did. And I mean, actually, I don't think they showed them hitting her, but they showed her body jerking with the strikes. And you could, I mean, it was really, really rough. But then she's getting up and she's getting ready, and she asks Ray if he's ready to go, and he is. He's gotten his weapons and everything, and he is ready to leave. So then we see Varga, and he's telling, like, this true story thing. He tells a lot of stories in this. Did you notice?
Yeah, he kind of followed the theme of the Coens and their works, where they always have this as a true story.
Yeah, he did. And I was kind of curious where that was going to go when it first came out. But he talks about this old bank, 150-year-old bank, that had $60 billion in assets, but it collapsed overnight. The stocks fell 93% in 8 hours. One day they were solid, the next day they were worthless. And the moral of this parable, the story that he's telling, is perception of reality is reality. So there was, like, a
Lehman
run on the
Brothers.
Bank.
He's talking about Lehman Brothers. They showed scenes from Lehman Brothers.
Oh, that's cool.
1850 to 2008, that bank went Chapter 11 in 2008 by subprime mortgage. And I think that's kind of probably the trouble that Emmett and Cy ran into, the mortgage, the housing, the real estate problem. And they lost their money. VM Varga jumped in and loaned them the money.
Right, because they talk about something a couple years ago, and we know it's 2010 now. So, yeah, I think you're right about that. So another true story he talks about, and he talks about how the First World War was started by a sandwich. And then we get this other mouth close-up in this of someone taking a bite of a sandwich. And it was about, what do you think about that story?
I think somewhere I read that the sandwich story is a lie. But the fact is that World War One was started by the murder of Archduke Ferdinand in Bosnia, I think, Sarajevo, some Bosnia somewhere in the Baltic states. And that, I think that part was true. He was there visiting, like touring around, and some
sandwich shop.
Single-minded terrorist guy just shot him and killed him.
And then we got one more true story, he says, and they go to the July 1969 first moon landing. And then he says it was filmed on a soundstage in New Mexico. Now, for whatever reason, this scandalized Cy. Yeah.
No way. He didn't want to believe that, for sure.
Well, no. And then we see that VMV is actually giving a presentation to Cy and Emmett. He's got all these photographs and everything up on the wall. They're in Emmett's house, I think, too, right? In place of at the office for some reason?
I didn't catch where they were.
It seemed like they were at his house, just thinking back on it. But he's saying that they're about to get this huge loan, a $50 million loan, and they're going to be buying 16 more lots. And they're after, of course, they give huge bonuses to all the partners. And Cy is like freaking out over here, right? Cy's going, you're talking about doubling our company in 6 months, but Varga corrects him to 3 months. And then he says that that's too aggressive. And, of course, Varga disagrees, but then Varga turns to Emmett, and Emmett, he's on board now, don't you think?
Well, yeah. Hey, Cy, no one got anywhere staying home. We're doing this. He says it.
Right. Yeah, whether you step off the board with 1 foot or two, you still end up in the water. So it was like, so if we had any question before, I think we don't have any question now that Emmett's kind of, do you think he's accepted what's happening, or do you think he's embraced what's happening?
No, I think he's defeated. He knows he's up against somebody he can't win against. And now he's defeated by his wife leaving and all the stuff with Ray. I think he's just defeated and he wants to just surrender. And I think that's part of why he essentially apologizes to Ray.
Okay. Okay.
He wants
well,
it
that...
to stop. He wants it. He just wants to go along and get along.
It's just hard to picture that he's this big business tycoon and has, you know, and was so easily and quickly defeated like that. I don't know. I couldn't tell if he, he's relying on Varga now. He's relying on him kind of like he used to rely on Sai, it seems like.
Well, I never thought of him as a big business successful tycoon.
Well, Mike, he's the parking lot king of Minnesota.
Yeah, but he got gifted his start seed money, and then he worked it up slowly but surely, which is, I guess, good business. I wouldn't call it a tycoon, though, to buy a parking lot space. And, you know, it's a good idea, and he didn't waste the money. But he's not a major corporate operator. You know, he's not a titan of industry.
Well, no, I guess you're right, but I just wouldn't picture somebody getting that far in life without having a little more, I don't know, backbone and coping mechanism than what he's dealing with here. He just, I think you're right. I think he's just kind of laid down and rolled over for them.
He's a medium fish in a small, small bowl, I would say. It's Minnesota, rural Minnesota, you know, Eden Valley, Eden Prairie, whatever it is. Yeah, it's not a big, he's not a huge corporate operator.
Well, Sai brings up the IRS are sitting in the conference room right now going over the books. And this is where Varga goes, they're going over some books, not the books. And yeah. Then Sai is just completely blown away by all this. He doesn't like this at all. And then Varga starts talking like the IRS are simple-minded, that they only catch the easy-to-catch people, the middle management type of people. They can't unravel a web of shell companies if you gave them an account numbers. So he's saying he's smarter than the IRS.
They catch the middle managers and the movie stars. They don't know anything about shell companies in Monaco and Luxembourg. And then he says, finance seems like it's just a hobby with you. Like, you're not really very good at this, to Sai. So he's right. He's calling the little fish what it really is. They aren't that big of a corporate entity, and they're, you know, now they're in way, way over their heads.
Yeah, but I think that those are famous last words, right? To think that the IRS is something to be trifled with.
Well, yeah, the IRS and the widow Goldfarb, I think, are allies, soon to be allies. Well, you got to almost call them slash enemies now to Emmett, because if he's bought into VM Varga, he's got to kind of hope he gets away with it, because otherwise he's going to be in big trouble.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely he is. Okay, then we go to the scene where the IRS guy's in there laying his stuff out.
There's one last thing VM Vargas says in the previous scenes is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. He says, this is not a parking lot company, it's a bank. So he's turned them into this money laundering laundromat now. They're just running money through there for whatever nefarious other businesses he's doing, and he's just washing that money clean.
Okay, what's the point of doing this? He's going to parasitically destroy this company, correct?
Well, the bigger he can make them look, the more money. You know, he's Skylar White, right? She can't wash that money all through the car wash. He needs a huge, huge corporate operation to get all that money processed through and then essentially money laundered. So he needs a bigger business. He needs to keep making it bigger.
So that's why he's buying more lots, so they can run more money through? Okay.
Yeah, now he's going to do, he said $50 million. So now he's going to do, instead of maybe they did a couple million in business and revenue, now they'll do 10 times that in revenue so that they can wash more money from their, I don't know, what did he say? They're doing stuff in Africa and in Somalia and whatever the heck they're doing. They need a bigger washing machine. Also, we heard in the background then Ray's, or I guess it's Emmett's head's voice and his mind's voice. He hears Ray's voice. You know, when I'm done with you, they'll be sponging you off the floor and you'll be you'll be making soup from your dirty socks.
Right.
So yeah. He's troubled by Ray and his discord, and he's beaten down, and so he's given up to VM Varga here.
Yeah, VM Varga continues to talk, but Emmett has left the conversation in his mind, and he's looking at the photos, but he's not thinking about anything except that fight with Ray, which is kind of telling because it feels like this means more to him now than his business. Or maybe it's just something he feels like he can handle or he can affect.
Yeah, or I've tried doing this my way, and look where it got me. I'm just at the least I can do is make up with my brother and put that right.
Right. Okay, so then we go to the IRS scene. The guy's sitting in there, and Mimo comes in. I swear, it took me a minute to realize that was Mimo.
Mimo sans headphones.
Yes. And I literally laughed when he laid his stuff out exactly like the IRS guy. He has been watching him, you know, the exact number of pins and the exact number of spaces and everything. But then he pushes paperwork toward him and says that they know their codes and everything, and he can't be there without giving them 30 days notice and notice of the paperwork they want to see and notice of who they want to interview. And so he's going to ask him to leave immediately. And he does.
Yeah, that's Section 41C, Michelle. Section 141C affords us representation, and I demand 30-day notice by mail. Vacate our offices immediately.
But now they're going to come back. That's why I'm wondering if they're not just going to do what they're doing and then just destroy this company, just implode it from within. Not that I think we'll ever see that, but I just wonder in a situation like that if that might be almost the goal of Varga, just to come in, suck it dry, destroy it, and then go on to the next thing.
Yeah, he's not sucking them dry, though. He's using them as a vehicle to, like we said, clean money from his other enterprises. So, but right. This window of whatever time he's bought with the IRS not sitting there until we're done investigating you. Now they have a window of time to figure out what to do. Whether it's cook up some real alternate books that are really, that would survive an IRS audit, or just cut and run, or do something else. But they need a little bit of time. That guy was not going to leave for 3 weeks or however long it took him to figure out what was going on there. And they may not have quite been ready for him.
Yeah, that's a good point. We also have to remember that all of this was brought on by Ray, and Ray taking out $2 more than he was allowed to take out without signaling as he stole from Emmett.
Yeah.
Well, then we see Mimo getting into the car with Yuri to some Russian festive music playing and heading back to the truck with Ray and Nikki following and watching with binoculars. Now, Ray goes off half-cocked with his gun. He's going to get out of the car, but Nikki stops him and says she wants to get him back too, but they have to wait. Okay, what are they waiting for?
No, I think they have to wait for the right time. He can't just go in there and start blasting. They're going to get caught. The more intel, Nikki's actually very smart here. She's gathering intel. Now she knows who they are, where they are. She didn't know any of that when she got beat up. This guy's drove off. I know they have a Cadillac. That's it. Now she knows, and she knows where their base is, and she knows this other guy now, VM Varga's connected. So to go out blasting right then and there is not very smart.
It's probably not if you don't have hindsight. But with hindsight, and we don't know, but things are looking rough for Nikki there for a little while anyway, and to get those guys out of the picture might have been, you know, the best thing for them to survive. I don't know. But I just thought it was funny that she knew Ray got the gun together and everything, and they went there, and then he goes to pull it out, and she stops him. And I just thought that was...
Yeah, I think she was going to gather intel, and Ray didn't really know what the plan was. He just thought, oh, okay, let's get him. And, you know, she didn't explain it to him while they're driving after them. But,
well, sure, and also, you know, the fact that she didn't let him do it does say that, I don't know, that maybe she did have a bigger plan in mind, even though she doesn't necessarily know what it is.
Yeah, and they don't have as much reason to worry now as they do later on when they figure out that they do have more to worry about. So right now, she's just gathering information, I think.
Well, then we go back and Nikki's in an ice bath. I mean, a literal ice bath, like bags of ice. And Ray's trying to get her to go to the ER because he fears she has internal injuries, which is what I had said last time with those kind of bruises and stuff on your torso with a little female like that. That's very, very dangerous. But Nikki points out that Ray has even said that the cops are, you know, looking for them and they got the bad guys looking for them. And then they start talking about how she thinks that Emmett is into something shady. Now, she thinks this why? Because of seeing those guys on his lot and because of what happened to her when she was meeting Cy?
Yeah, she's figured out the scam pretty much. I know you don't like this. I really like this. I like that Winnie and Gloria figured it out. I like that Nikki's smart to figure it out. I mean, I think Noah Hawley put it there. He gave enough information so smart people could figure it out. They could take those hints of clues and figure these things out. So I like that. I don't really always like it when we know everything, but the people in the play don't know what's going on. I like when they figure things out. I like that processing.
Yeah, I do like it, but I think we've seen a lot this whole television season. Like right now, it seems like that they're not giving them enough information to figure this out like that. Not to speak about it with authority, like they're speaking about it like Gloria and Winnie and stuff. It was just, I understand that we only have 10 episodes in this and there's only so much time to develop this. I get all that, but it just, yeah, it's not my favorite thing because it's way too good of a guess to me. That just by these guys showing up and beating her up, she doesn't know Emmett. She doesn't know anything. She knows he kept Ray's stamp and, you know, evidently had some money problems that Ray talked about a little bit on episode one. And then she deduces all this. So it was just, I don't know. But I also wanted to point out that Nikki's tough as nails. I just want to throw that out there. If you can lay in a bath, first of all, I don't think that's probably very healthy for you at all. But if you can actually lay in an ice bath like that.
Yeah, I was wondering if Elizabeth really had to do that. Or do you think they fill that tub up with like clear ice cubes?
Like I do plastic, not think.
Like plastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to see if it was like real. I don't believe that for a second that was real ice cubes. First of all, I mean, that's kind of dangerous. You know, the only reason that you would ever want to cool your body down is if your body is hot. And if she has a fever, then she has something more going on than just the bruise. I didn't like it from a medical standpoint at all. Okay, then we see your favorite scene where VMV is digging at his gum line. It's hurting my mouth to say. And there's blood like going all over his teeth. He's got something that looks what would you call it? It's like the end of a compass or something?
No, it's a pop rivet. So the way that works is if you look at it, or if you can remember what it looked like. It's a pop rivet. You put it through a hole. Okay, it's got like a fat end on one end that's the end he's holding with, and he's kind of poking at his gnarly teeth with the pointy, smaller diameter end. Mm-hmm. It's like a nail with the head on it. You poke it through a hole, and then you have a gun that pulls the thinner part towards you and squishes the fat part together on both sides of the hole, like to hold two pieces of metal together or to hold... You know, like a screw and a nut and a bolt would hold two things together.
Okay.
Although a pop rivet is more permanent because once it's stuck together, it's together for good. So there's a gun. There's the tool that pulls all that and performs that procedure is a rivet gun. So you just squeeze it and it squishes it together. So I don't know. So it's kind of a construction-y type of thing, but he's got his hands on one and he's pecking at his teeth with it.
This is where I knew the guy was truly mad.
It's not a dental. It's like using a giant nail to pick your teeth. You know, it's not a sophisticated way to clean your teeth.
Well, but yeah, if he were taking something and he were cleaning his teeth with it, then you could still go, ew, but he's not doing that. He's like damaging his gum with this blood. And there's something really wrong with this scene. Something really off with this guy. We've seen him with his bulimia, and now we've seen this. And there's another thing in here in just a little while, but...
Well, at least they had the camera far back, so it wasn't, like, right in our face.
No. It was right in our face.
I'm kidding. But the teeth are the way they are because of the bulimia.
Well, maybe the bulimia and the pop rivet.
Yeah, but I think the eroded teeth are from the stomach acid of the bulimia.
Sure.
And poking at them is to like, ooh, this hurts. I better poke that a little bit. That's because of the that's because the teeth are bad. That's not making the teeth bad.
No. But just digging in your gum like that, I mean, there's, you know, it's not a good idea, I wouldn't think. And he's just, I don't know, something really creepy. I don't like it.
Well, they make super little elegant, like inexpensive things that you can get at frickin' Walgreens that you can get 100 of them for $6. Those little dental cleaner things, those are perfect for that. Not to dig into the flesh of your gums, but certainly not a metal rivet that old VMV is using here.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily take that as him cleaning his gums. First of all, it doesn't look like he cleans his teeth with much of anything. First
stomach
of all.
Acid.
Well, and then I just took it more as like this self-mutilation kind of thing. It didn't feel like he was cleaning his teeth to me. We didn't see him move it across his teeth. We saw him like dig it into one part of his gum.
He was being like a little careful, though. He wasn't just like jabbing himself and giving himself pain on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he was or not. I don't know. There's something weird. Something is weird, and
He looked like he was wincing a little bit, like like this is painful. You know, he wasn't purposely causing himself pain, I don't think.
Well, he kind of was, right? I mean, because he was doing it, and what was the point of doing it? Was he helping himself?
Well,
I mean, you know.
Could argue you cause yourself pain when you remove a splinter from your finger, too, but it's better to get the splinter out. And I don't know what – I admit it, Michelle. I have no idea what he's doing, but I think he's trying to fleck food or get the – you know, do something to help his teeth, not cause them more harm.
Okay, I didn't get that at all. You could be right, but I completely believe that the guy is just mad. I think he's mad, and I think he's got some kind of something going on. If he's even there, if he's even who he says he is and what he says he is, but I think he's got something really kind of demented going on. There would be no reason to show us that if he were just like trying to be, trying to do some oral hygiene. I don't know. That was craziness. But he sees Winnie and Gloria walking into Emmett's office. And it was funny the way he walked up to the window. It was like he was, it really struck me. I even made a note of it here. It was like he walked up to the window, and it's a glass. His whole office is glassed in. But it was like they couldn't see him the way he walked up to the window. It was like he was looking in, but they couldn't see him. And, of course, we've seen him through the glass. We know he's out there, but it was just really weird how they did that. But he goes in to the office, and he really inserts himself in this conversation. He lords over Emmett and doesn't want him to answer the questions. And he's very interruptive and intrusive. Do you think the police would really allow something like that?
If I were Gloria and Winnie, I'd love to have this new information. Although he's going to block Emmett from giving them what they want. But he's kind of revealing himself as a player now. They didn't know about him before. That's why I think they didn't pay much attention to him. I don't think that glass was like preventing them from seeing him. I think they just thought, oh, there's a guy. There's another office guy. We know he's not Ray, and we know he's not Well, we don't know who he is, so he's not that important to us. But now he's very important to them.
Well, yeah, because he went in there and just inserted himself into it.
Yeah, I'm sure they thought that with Emmett, they were talking to the head honcho till VMV showed up.
Yeah, shows up and is almost ridiculing to Emmett. He's his, what, shoe, the lady shoe salesman? I mean, he's being a smart aleck, but he's being a demeaning smart aleck, too.
Well, Emmett dismisses him. No, it's okay, I got this. And VMV just walks deeper into the room and kind of sits on the window ledge and plants himself into the conversation.
I was really surprised that they allowed that without even having his name.
Yeah, well, they tried to get his name.
Yeah, but he wouldn't give it. He said, you know, all you need to know is that I'm an associate of Mr. Stussy. He wouldn't give his name.
This dialogue is glorious. You know, pardon the pun, Gloria, but it is freaking awesome dialogue. I may be of assistance. This is my area of expertise. Just perfect, man. And we didn't catch your name. That's right. You didn't catch it.
Yeah,
I didn't write it all down, but it's sweet.
Yeah, and he uses words like, you know, surmise. He used that again. So you're surmising. We heard that before, because they're talking about how the accident might be tied to a homicide. And I don't think Emmett even knew about the accident at this point. Emmett was kind of blindsided by this. And so then to find all that, and they tell him the story and everything. And then Varga goes into the story that in 1932, there were 24 Hitlers in the phone book. And were they all responsible for the final solution? And Gloria, she doesn't miss a beat. She goes, 24 exactly, huh?
Yeah.
And as she said that, and he gets this look because people don't stand up to him too much. And we hear the bell, you know, one of the dings. I thought that was pretty interesting. But Gloria asks Emmett if there was something about money with his brother or something that his brother wanted or something, which was a very, very close thing to what happened. Now, I can believe that. That's believable to me, considering that her stepfather's house was torn apart for something, looking for something.
She asks if there's a feud with you and Ray.
Yes, she does. And he says that there's not. He said they've had differences over the years, but he's almost insulted by the word feud. But Emmett is taken aback because here he realizes that, or he thinks anyway, that Ray was trying to rob him.
Right.
And maybe really has something to do with this other Stussy going away, dying, being killed. Because they kind of just told him the whole thing.
Also, but interestingly, VM Varga wants to know what they see as the connection. Like, he doesn't start denying things and telling them just to leave. He wants to know what they know.
Right.
What do you see as this connection? He wants them to spill what they have as far as intel.
And Winnie starts to spill a couple things and explain herself. But Gloria's keeping it pretty tight-lipped, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Gloria versus VMV here in this four-way conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Varga calls Gloria a detective, and she corrects him to chief.
Yep.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
The truth is what you make it. Yep, she's making her own truth here.
But then Varga just kicks him out. And then he asks if Eden Valley is a nice town. And they say, and Gloria says they have a Tasty Freeze and a Dairy Queen.
Makes it a nice town to me.
Okay. They leave, and Varga tells Emmett that it seems his brother has a backbone after all.
Yeah.
But I don't think he means that in a positive way, because I don't think Varga's very admiring of the backbone.
He's musing out loud to himself, essentially, like, I'm going to have to do something about this Ray guy after all. He's not just some schmuck. He's coming after Emmett for what he thinks he owes him.
Right.
He's going to be trouble I have to deal with.
Well, then we see that Varga is looking up Gloria Burgle from his truck hidey hole space. And I just was thinking the whole time how funny it would have been if she could have somehow put up something that popped up when Irv was looking him up. That would have been so funny if something like that would have popped up. But, of course, it didn't. And nothing comes up. He can't find her. He can't find her on Google. And he can't find the Eden Valley Police Department. He can't find anything. And...
Well, he finds the Eden Valley Police Department, but nothing about her on it. He looks up
their webpage. They don't have a webpage, really. They just had it. He ended up just seeing Eden Valley, and then it showed just the outside of the library.
Yeah, but that was the representation of the Eden Valley Police Department on the web. That was their only thing.
It sure wasn't much. Then... we see Yuri is holding that wolf head when he's talking to Yuri and Mimo. What was that?
Well, that's what the wolf was we saw.
That was crazy. He's just holding a wolf head?
Or a wolf mask, yeah. Some sort of costume.
Well, Varga goes to Yuri and Mimo, and he's telling them that the police station has no computers, and he wants them to get a case file for Stussy. And Mimo asks if Varga wants him to listen in on the Goldfarb meeting later on today, but Varga tells them, no, you need to find Ray and Nikki and execute them.
Execute Ray and the bitch.
That's what he said. So then we see Ray, and he's bringing Nikki some hot tea as she's in bed. Okay, tell me about this. There's like this persistent knock and ding, 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 ding on the bell. And, of course, it's Winnie and Gloria out there. Why didn't Ray just go to the door, wonder?
Well, he didn't know who it was at first. He doesn't want to talk to anybody, really. He doesn't want to talk to the police much more than he wants to talk to the Varga or the guys who beat up Nikki. He's just trying to... hide out. And at this point, I think they're starting to think we got to just lay low.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But I mean, this was his house. He was at his home. So it wasn't like they were really hiding out anywhere. They were just at home. So I thought it was
answering the door and hiding behind your closed door is essentially hiding out, I think.
Yeah. Well, Gloria and Winnie drive off saying they'll come back tomorrow or whatever. So then
Michelle, on the wall was this poster of particles. Did you see that? The smashing particles?
I did not.
Which is the narrow escape problem in physics, is that an opening in a molecule or a cell or something is, or some sort of atomic reaction. The smaller that opening gets, the particles smash together faster and faster until eventually they can't get out. So he has a smashing particles poster on the wall.
Ray has that?
Yeah, it was on Ray's wall. Because that's Ray's apartment, right?
Yeah, it is. It was definitely Ray's apartment. That's funny. That's real. It's a good catch. But then we see that it's nighttime and Ray and Nikki are sneaking out and they're driving away. And they pull up to this Ambassador Motor Inn because they have to find a place that'll take cash. Now, most hotels and stuff won't do that anymore, will they?
I haven't tried to pay cash for a hotel since last Saturday, Michelle. No, it's probably been 15, 20 years. I can't even remember the last time.
Yeah, but they have to find a place, and I assume that's why they were in this particular place. But they go inside, and Ray gets Nikki in, but she's hurting. And, of course, we see Mimo watching them from a car. But Ray gets Nikki settled, and he goes to get the luggage and all that. And when he comes back in, she requests more aspirin. Now, this is, like, the third time she's asked him for aspirin. Are they, like, purchasing aspirin one at a time or something like that?
Well, I think she's probably taking a lot of aspirin because she asked for an aspirin brew or something or aspirin tea. Like he's grinding up aspirin into some sort of a concoction. Like she's getting more than just two aspirins, I think.
Well, that's very, very scary too, because aspirin will cause you to bleed. And if you have internal injuries or any kind of anything like that, you don't necessarily want your blood thinner.
What do you want this poor girl to do, Michelle? You don't want her in ice. You don't want her taking aspirin. You just want her to sit there and suffer.
No, she can have a compress, but she, geez, I was really worried about how she was handling herself medically.
So people were talking about this hotel. Like, it looked like the hotel where the goofball police played strip poker when they were after the crew from season 2. Looked like the same hotel.
It really did, didn't it?
And then when we get inside the hotel, I have some comments. It looked like the shower scene. It looked like the No Country for Old Men hotel. The bathroom and behind the curtain and the doorway slightly open. I think those were homages to No Country.
Oh, that's pretty good, too. Yeah, the only thing that I kept thinking about was that it looked almost like the hotel that Gloria visited at when she went to Hollywood. But, of course, I didn't think it was that. But it just kept reminding me of that. But I guess that's just the style of hotel. But they find out, she finds out that Ray has forgotten the money. They have literally snuck out of his house, like packed up and left. And he forgot the bag of money, and they can't be tracked.
And that's an homage to Pulp Fiction, right? Where Bruce Willis' girlfriend forgets the watch or something. He has to go back and leave her behind.
Oh, good catch, yeah.
I guess that's more Tarantino than Coen's, but that's always an interesting dilemma. Is it worth it? Do I have to go back for it?
Well, money, yeah.
For sure. The watch was stupid, but money for sure.
Well, they absolutely had to go back for the money. They've got no money. They can't use their cards. She's pointing out how they'll track the cards and everything. So, yeah, they absolutely had to go back for the money. And it's so tragic that he had to do that. But she even offers to go because why? Why do you think she said, do you want me to go? I mean, she can barely move.
Because Ray's an idiot.
Oh. But, well, he says he's fine. He flashes his gun toward her.
Well, what did you think? Did you think Ray was, did you think she was worried Ray might not come back?
No, I didn't think it, like deliberately just leave her.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. I don't think Ray would leave her for anything on earth. Do you?
No, I know Ray wouldn't leave her, but why do you think she wanted to go along then?
I don't think she wanted to go along. I thought she said she'd go instead because they were looking for Ray. They came to Ray's house. And, you know, if they were staking him out or something, then not that they would have been, but if they were, you know, they were looking for him, not her.
Well, and that she makes just sense. Although she, then what? So she gets there and somebody's there and then she has to slip them in her tough condition and get back to somehow in the hotel and get back to Ray?
Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know. But she's obviously not in any shape to be doing any of this stuff. She's really not in any shape to even be, you know, traveling. She's not in a shape. She should be probably in a hospital, certainly in a bed somewhere.
I think one thing Ray might have done is at least left her the gun. But he's like, no, don't worry, I got the gun. But that just means you're leaving her all alone, right? In like a really bad physical condition with no defense.
Right, and not a great, you know, I mean, they're not in the Four Seasons, right? And she's just like lying there. And they know people are after them, bad people who've already hurt her. So, yeah, I agree with you. But I made a note here that when he left, I said, I do not feel good about this. Even before I found out, you know, the rest of the story. But you can hear.
You didn't think he was going to come back with a tasty freeze?
I did not. I actually thought something was going to happen to Nikki, was just my initial thought. I thought Ray was going to come back and find her as a, you know. I thought it was going to turn out like that. I thought it was going to be more Ray's revenge over Nikki because he was so crazy about her and so infatuated and loved her so much. That when something happened to her, it was going to literally change who he was.
So I guess we're left to determine or to live with the fact that she really did love him because there's no way that she would now break up with him that we can ever find out about. We have to believe one way or the other without any more proof, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. They might show us something down the road where it was all just like a scam on her part or something like that, but I can't imagine that that's going to happen. But why? I mean, she didn't trust him, right? She didn't trust him to get out of the car and handle these guys. I mean, she knew he was going off half-cocked. She didn't trust him to go meet with Si to get the money. She, you know, she knew that he couldn't.
She didn't trust his competency. I don't think she mistrusted him as far as like a friend or a lover. It was like, you're not competent to do this. Maybe I should do it.
Well, sure. That's what I meant. She didn't feel like he was smart enough, I guess,
yeah,
to handle things the way she would.
Right.
I don't know. But we can hear Ray driving off, and then we see Mimo standing at the vending / ice machines down there.
Got the headphones back on.
He does. So then we see Nikki, and she's leaving her room to get some ice, and she's walking very gingerly and slowly, and, you know, you're just terrified she's going to come around the corner, and there stands Mimo, but nope. They show back the room, and the door's closing very slowly, the door that she had left open. So we know something's going on in there.
Yeah, and the No Country for Old Men door. That guy should be in there, but he's not. Even in the bathroom, he's not behind the bathtub shower curtain. Where is he? You know, that made you think Mimo was in there, and he wasn't.
Well, he was in there. At one point, they showed him in there. And then he gets, like, the message or the phone call or whatever, and then he's not in there.
Right. Well, that's what I mean, though. It's kind of like that movie, because that's Shiger was in there. They showed him in there, and then when he went in, he wasn't in there. And when she goes in there, Mimo's not in there.
Well, we kind of have the exact same thing with Mimo and Ray and Emmett and Varga in just a minute. Because, well, we'll talk about it when we get there. But Ray is back at home, and he's skulking around, and the only thing we can see, the blinds where he's pulled up, and like his headlights, the blinds from the very beginning of this episode. So that was really cool. I love it when they tie stuff up like that. But the car lights are shining through him this time in place of the morning lights. And he walks inside. There's no light except the fish tank, and Emmett's there saying, "You win. Whatever you want, just tell me." And Ray, of course, is shocked that he's there, and Emmett's like, "I co-signed the mortgage, you know, of course I have a key." Emmett says that he's really, like, talking about the stuff that Ray's done to him, like pouring out the dog in the trash, the Dalmatian at the bank, and he goes into all that it was Grace's dog when she was 7, it meant a lot to him. And then Ray's very defensive. He says he was just looking for his stamp. But Emmett is, like, kind of pitiful. He says he doesn't know of a single person who doesn't like him. He's a fair man. And he says, but you know, you're my family, and you're the only person I know who doesn't like me.
I don't think that's pitiful. I think Emmett's relating accurately what he really is. He is a fair man. He says not a single person doesn't like me. And have we met anyone that doesn't like Emmett in the whole time? You know, you could see his position in this town. He's kind of a respected, you know, moderately successful, pretty successful businessman. Everyone likes him. He's fair. He treats people right. You know, you wonder how much he really did slight Ray. If Ray, you know, was just pretty much a fuck up his whole life.
Well, right. And by pitiful, I meant vulnerable. I used the wrong word. But he's really making himself vulnerable, I think, to Ray by telling him all this. He seems not pitiable, but relatable, I guess. I mean, I think he's trying to just be honest.
Yeah, he's defeated. Him. He's been defeated by Varga. He's been defeated by Ray taking his wife out of the picture. You win. That means I'm defeated. You win. All right, I give up. Tell me what you want. I'll get it for you.
But Ray, what's he doing here? He's just saying, I'm not less than you. He's still angry. He's got some kind of inferiority complex or something.
Yeah, that's why I think Ray, the problems with Ray and Emmett are Ray's problem. Ray's, he's petty. I'm not less than you like some child because I'm your younger brother. Like, nobody said you were, Ray. I'm, you know, he's here trying to set everything right, even if it's even Emmett's reaching out farther and being more vulnerable than any of them ever have been. And Ray doesn't even recognize that. He's like, well, wait a minute. I'm not less than you. Can't just do this and give this back to me. It's Ray's problem, not Emmett's problem.
So do you think this was Emmett's serious attempt at a reconciliation with Ray?
Absolutely.
Okay. I felt like it was too. But Emmett walks over, he's bringing Ray the stamp and he hands it to him and he says, it's finished. Okay. Words were said in anger, crimes were committed. Both of us, it was all madness. And he says, I don't want this anymore. I'm giving you the stamp. And he's got this really sweet, like vulnerable look on his face. And it's exactly what you said would have happened if everybody would have just left them alone. If Cy would have stayed out of it and everybody would have left them alone, they would have figured out their own relationship and been able to work this out. And none of this would have come to pass.
Yeah, they were two sentences away from it three episodes ago or whatever it was when they're on the benches outside of Emmett's house. Emmett wasn't quite ready to hug him back, so that was a little too fast for him, but he just needed a little bit more time. And, all these other things happened with VM Varga and his wife leaving, but that doesn't mean that wasn't in Emmett's emotions at that time, that, hey, if I ever had a chance, I'd reconcile with my brother if I just only had some time.
Right. He just needed a little bit more time and a little bit more beat down, I guess, to.
Sometimes that's what it takes. You know, we all learn every day as we live, right? You don't know everything, and then you just go out and use what you know. You learn every day. You learn a little bit more about yourself.
Well, but here's Ray saying, well, you can't give me what's mine from the start. And yeah.
How dare you try to give me something that already belongs to me? Like, I know, right, dude, what do you want? What do you want me to do?
I know it was awful, you know, and Emmett rolls his eyes at him and they start scuffling and the frame hits Ray in the head, glass shatters and stabs him in the neck. And then, even then, He's just standing there, and of course Emmett sees this big shard of glass in Ray's neck, and Ray goes to grab it, and Emmett says, "Don't." He doesn't say "don't" once. He says it twice. He says, "Don't." Pause. Don't. And Ray won't listen. He will not listen.
It would be hard to not pull a shard of glass out of your body, though, if, you know, within a minute after it was just stuck in there.
If you ever have a shard of anything in anything stuck in you like that, I mean, that's the first rule, though. You do not remove it because it can be holding pressure on a nicked artery or something to that effect. A nicked organ or anything can be holding pressure and prevent you from bleeding out. If he hadn't pulled that out of his own neck, I don't know. I mean, it was a pretty bad, you know, a jugular wound, it looked like, but he could have lived.
What about an arrow?
Well, certainly not an arrow.
Machete. I know what you're saying. It's because you release the cork from the blood and blood flows out. But I'm just saying it's psychologically, it would be hard not to pull a foreign object out of your body if it got stuck into you.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, if it's a life or death call, then you should maybe think before you do that. So anyway, down to the literal last seconds of his life, he was being contrary to what his brother told him, contrary to, like, good advice. I thought it was just so sad. And then he's pitiful because he realizes, he pulls it out and you see the blood spurt. And that is not what you want to see from this neck wound. You don't want to see that from any wound, but... But then he says, Emmett, and Emmett can't do anything.
So the bird kills the duck. Emmett's the bird, right?
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
So yeah, the bird killed the duck. I don't know what that means, but somebody's got to say it.
Well, then Varga answers his phone. Emmett picks up the phone and Varga answers and he goes into this story. Everything's a parable with this guy. he talks about what Lennon said about Beethoven's Piano Sonata number 23. Vladimir Ulanov, not the bloody walrus. I know nothing that is greater than a passionata, but I cannot listen too often. It affects one's nerves and makes one want to say kind, stupid things and stroke the heads of those who, living in such a foul hell, can create such beauty. Better to beat the person unmercifully over the head. What a odd way to say hello.
Yeah, essentially it boiled down, I think, that he's trying to say, I can't listen to something that makes me nice, because when I'm in that type of mode, I do silly, stupid, kind things. So he thinks it's almost a weakness. I could do such nice things that those living in foul hell would have mercy. And it's better to be the other way, better to beat them about the head.
But didn't it almost seem like he knew what was going on and he couldn't have possibly known what was going on?
Yeah, he's definitely some sort of cosmic, like you said, some cosmic, otherly, other humanly being of some kind.
And then he says, where are you, Mr. Stussy? Because Emmett's just been staring at Ray this whole time. And finally he says, there's been an accident. Can you come? So this was really weird that he, you know, didn't know. I mean, he couldn't have known. And then he knew. It was.
Yeah. He also, doesn't he say, like, things of consequence rarely happen by chance or something?
He does in the very next scene, yeah. Yeah, when he gets there, he says that. But he says that he's going to come, and he says he'll leave immediately. And then Emmett starts to cry looking at Ray. So then we see Nikki going back into the hotel. And this was what I did not want to see. I thought we were going to see another beatdown of Nikki. But like you said, it was very...
No Country.
No Country. Almost. What was that other movie? The Psycho movie with the pullback of the shower curtain. I don't know. But she opens the door. She's a coat hanger. So she's going to fight Mimo with a coat hanger.
She's suspicious, too, like the sheriff was in No Country. Like, I don't know about this. Because she left the door open, right? She went and got the ice. She left the door open to go get the ice, I think.
She did. She left it not just open, but specifically open to a certain degree. And when she came back, it wasn't that exact degree.
Yeah.
Which you would think Mimo would do that, as meticulous as he is. But he didn't. But he's not there anyway. But he had gotten a call. They show him in the bathroom, and he had gotten a call or a notification on his phone. And then he's just not there. Now, most of these little hotel rooms like that, these little motel rooms, there's not a back door, is right. there?
Well, that's what I mean. He got out of there in a way that he shouldn't. He got out of there like Melville got out of the basement when he shouldn't have been able to. He somehow was not there. Like Shigur got out of the room when, how? He should be in there, right? Not in the bathroom. Yeah. Not out, well, he didn't walk past her on his way out the front door. What happened to him?
We're definitely seeing a lot of stuff like that. And then this very next scene. Okay, so Emmett's sitting in Ray's apartment and Varga comes in. And Emmett asks Varga, did anybody see him? And Varga said, he's so rarely seen that maybe he doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
And they kind of focus on his face for just a minute. And then we hear Mimo whistle from the other side of the room. And how'd he get in there?
I don't know, unless he walked in with VM Varga.
Well, he didn't. He didn't because Emmett just went to the door to let Varga in. Mimo wasn't with him.
I think we know that we're asking questions that we can't answer, Michelle.
I think so. But it's starting to feel more and more unworldly to me, what's going on. But Varga says, well, you called for help, and this is what help looks like. And then we find out this. See, you can't like anybody in this, because we find out here that Emmett wouldn't even check his brother's body for a pulse because he was afraid he'd leave fingerprints.
No, that's what Varga says. But I could see Emmett not, you know, I was afraid that he might be dead. I could see that as a irrational fear. I wanted to find the pulse, but I was afraid. And Varga, like a smart-ass criminal, says, oh, afraid of leaving fingerprints? He's like, that's a jab. That's not like a observation.
But why? I kind of wondered at the same time, okay, if somebody's bleeding like that, what's the first thing you're going
to
do?
Well, you're a nurse, Michelle. You're probably used to seeing people with trauma, and you might be less reticent to act. This is his brother, and he's weak. Emmett's a weak little pussy, and he's essentially responsible, you know, partially for arguing and pushing and shoving. Like, maybe I killed him. Maybe I put the... If it wasn't for me, he wouldn't have had that glass in him. You know, I was afraid to find out he was dead. I think that's an irrational thing that is plausible.
I guess. I just think that if you see somebody bleeding, most of us know, most 10-year-olds know, apply pressure to that wound. And he didn't even touch him. He actually backed up from him when it happened.
So you think it was kind of like almost a Walter White, like, ooh, this is my chance to get rid of this character?
Absolutely not. I do not think that that was what was going through his mind. I just feel like he is such a wimpy man that in place of doing anything.
It's exactly what he is.
I mean, that's his brother. His brother could have been alive.
So VM Varga's just like smarmy. He's like, oh, good move. Afraid of leaving fingerprints. Oh, that was really smart not to leave your fingerprints on the body. He's just jabbing him. He's just being a dick to him.
Well, you can't tell by Emmett because Emmett's not offended by him or whatever. But Varga wants to know where else he might have left fingerprints. And so Emmett's telling him that. And that's Emmett could have been at his brother's house. It's not, I mean, there's no telling if they were brothers. I mean, you know, his fingerprints could have been there. But, okay, now here Varga tells Mimo to collect the frame and the stamp, but leave the glass. Are they just going to leave the body there to be found with the glass? Is that what they were going to do?
Yeah, because they have a plan. They tell us their plan. Although Emmett, you might think Emmett's fingerprints might be on that glass. But yeah, they tell us the whole plan. A very good plan, by the way, by Varga.
Okay, what's the plan? I might have missed it.
Well, let's go through, finish the scene, and we'll go through it, and then it'll come out.
Okay. So he starts asking Emmett, is there not some place you're supposed to be? Because he knows Emmett has a dinner meeting with Goldfarb at 6, and Emmett's kind of out of it. So he takes off his glove and he like flips Emmett in the head and asks him again. And so he finally says he has dinner with Cy. And then Varga goes into this whole thing about how to go in through the back door and wash your face and hands in cold water. So if anybody sees you, they won't know that you've just arrived. And then he goes into the whole thing that says that he tells Emmett that Ray was killed by his ex-con girlfriend. He'd been beating her in places that don't show, which, how fortuitous is that? And tonight she cut his throat and watched him bleed.
Right. So that's the plan. That's the idea.
So they're just going to leave him?
Well, Mimo says somewhere before all this, he says, bury the body, missing person. And VM Varga says, nope, take the frame and the stamp and leave the glass. And that's his. So on the fly there, VM Varga thought this plot up, which is genius, really. Nikki's got bruises all over her body. They're going to make it look like she and Ray had a fight and she stabbed Ray with the glass.
Yeah, and I mean, it could even come back to how Ray was acting on the bus, yelling, and then said he was talking to his mother, which was funny at the time, but he could definitely be seen as a hothead.
Right. Or Nikki's having an affair with Emmett, and he came over and stabbed Ray with the glass. You know, because Emmett's fingerprints are probably on the glass, and VM Varga wants to leave the glass. And then as they're leaving, Emmett says, "I didn't mean to," and VM Varga says, "Aha, no one ever does. Like, but you did." Right?
Yeah, so it's pretty bad. And then he tells Mimo to walk Emmett to the car and make sure you're not seen. How do you make sure you're not seen?
Well, I mean, this is all very Mike Ehrmantraut too. Like back to that Walter White scene with Jane. This is exactly what he, Mike does to help Jesse. He, when Jane's dead in the morning, he like has to slap him, right? Has to kind of wake him out of his inaction and get him to almost recite the words back to me and to tell me what you do this, then do this. Like gives him all the steps. You're going to go into the restaurant. You're going to wash up. You're going to go through the back door. No one will know you. No one will see your arrival. Look at me. He like makes him focus, you know, just like Mike did. And he gives him the reason. He gives him the story. Your brother was killed by the ex-con girlfriend and he was abusing her. Now that's the story to Emmett. VM Varga might have another plan for Emmett, like I said, with the fingerprints on the glass, that he may try to blame Emmett. Although I think VM Varga needs Emmett. He needs him to stay in place in that business.
But do you think Emmett would go along with something like that? That's not a good man. That's not a fair man. If he's going to blame Nikki for killing him when it was just an accident.
Yeah, but he is what you observed, Michelle. He's a weak man. He wouldn't even help his brother stop bleeding because he was afraid to act. He's putty now. He's just a lump of putty.
Well, then we see Gloria. She's driving and she's remembering all the conversations with Emmett and Ray and Varga, and she finally just says, screw it. She makes a U-turn. She calls the St. Cloud Metro and she wants to get a message to Winnie that she's headed back and meet her there. And then the car kicks into gear, and she's determined, I think, was the look that I saw on her face. She's done putting stuff off. Now, was she going to go back to Ray's, do you think? Is that what she wanted to meet Winnie?
Yeah, she says, meet me back at the PO's domicile, the parole officer, PO.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she's going to kick ass until, you know, whatever conflict she and VM Varga have, that clash of the titans is. But it's perfect. It's perfect. Things coming to a head here. It's going to be really interesting in the last four episodes.
Yeah, really, it really is. It's been a great season so far, and I was really shocked that they ended up killing Ray in this one. I thought it was a brave, bold move. I don't know why you would expect anything different from the Coens, from, you know, the Fargo series, but
yeah, I mean, everybody was saying, oh, not much is happening. There's a lot of talk. Well, there's some stuff happening. I think beating up Nikki and killing off Ray is, you know, we kind of had to see some of this start somewhere in this, you know, and this leaves us with more questions than it answers, really. And we knew these guys were bad. We're starting to see how bad they really are. And now good people might have to suffer for this. It's essentially an accident, but good people might get blamed for it.
Well, we're barely over half of the season. I mean, we just finished episode 6. So everybody who's complaining about, you know, nothing's happened, I think a lot's happened. I don't know how you could really say that at this point, or even, you know, prior to this point.
Well, up to the end of last episode, not very much action-wise has happened. Like, going into the bank and getting the money, and you know, that's like strategy. It's really not very action oriented. So now we're starting to see some action.
Well, next week, the episode's entitled The Law of Inevitability. And the law of inevitability says that something must happen. One of heads or tails must come up in the toss of a coin. And if you've got them both covered, you're guaranteed to win. A well-known stock tipping scam uses this to morally dubious advantage. So that's what the law of inevitability is.
Did you see any Next On previews?
I did. We see housekeeping knocking on Nikki's door. Or they're saying they're housekeeping, and then someone bursting through the door in the hotel. We see Nikki in the police station being shown a photo with a male cop, and I'm pretty sure it's Mo, the new chief, saying he's dead, in case you couldn't tell. Emmett is saying, are you saying he had a heart attack? And then we flash to the scene where the frame hits Ray in the head and glass goes everywhere. Winnie is thinking foul play. Gloria Burgle introduces herself as chief of Eden Valley Police while Moe's standing there, and Moe says, for about another week. So he's demeaning her right there in front of her. Emmett is saying, you and Ray, menacingly to Si, who says, what? Like, Emmett's kind of saying, you and Ray, or something, and Si's like, what? So Gloria says she's not talking about certainty. She's saying there's doubt. And then we see Nikki sitting in a jail cell. And then we see Si's wife is hugging him and saying, for Pete's sakes, hon, what's wrong? And Si tearfully says, the world. And then I watched the extended clip of next week's on Fargo FX on Facebook, and we see Emmett and Si at the meeting with the Widow Goldfarb, and Winnie walks in, and Si gets up. He says, this is harassment now, and he gets up to go meet her, and he talks to her for a second as Emmett's looking on, and the Widow Goldfarb's talking, but her voice is fading in the background to Si's, or to Emmett's, like, ringing in his ears because, you know, he knows what's coming. He's paranoid. And finally, Si motions for him to come over, and Si says, it's Ray. And Emmett immediately blurts out, I've been here since 6. And he hadn't been asked anything.
All right, Michelle, I want to watch this now while we're doing our podcast. This is all the stuff. Like, it made me super interested when we did the Americans. And by the way, you're right about the stamps, because as I open up the FX website, I see a lighter and I see a newspaper and I see a thing with a fuse on it and a couple guns, like a rifle and an axe and some boots, and so there's more stamps.
Yeah, it looked like there was maybe some more.
So what's next week? The law of inevitability. So where's the previews? The top video?
I watch the previews on TV, so I don't know where those are. The long scene was on Facebook.com/FargoFX.
Let me just do a quick click here. This might be interesting to look at. Okay, well then. That's this clip. Okay then. Well, okay then. I don't know what it is because it's not coming up. It's an old lady coming out of a hardware store.
Have a good night.
Gloria going in, and the door won't open for her, so she walks face first into it. What the heck? Snow shovel sale, Michelle. 2 for 1.
Hey.
The door opens after Gloria leaves. That's that clip. Okay, well then. Like, she gives up on that technology. Yeah, I don't know, so.
The long clip is under post. It was 20 hours ago. It's right below some of the other stuff on there.
Okay. Well, so people can look it up. We won't make them wait while we suffer through the internet here. But law of inevitability is like some of these things have to clash eventually. And I see, you know, Gloria, maybe 3 equal forces. I'm going to put Nikki in there equal to Gloria and VM Varga. I think she's a powerful force.
She may be. She may be kind of crushed at this point. I don't know what all she's got left. You know, she's physically beaten. She didn't look like herself in this whole episode. And she's got the police after her, and she's got the bad guys after her. So,
well, and if she's in jail for the fake plot that Varga has, too, that's taking her out of commission, too.
Right. And she doesn't even have, you know, Ray to depend on anymore. It's,
well, that's an asset. He caused her more trouble than helped her. All right. Let me do this really quick. I'll do a Facebook/Fargo.
Fargo FX show.
Fargo FX.
Uh-huh.
Let's get a double bonus podcast 3 minutes here. Oh, yeah, FX is in one of the stamps on this. So, okay, Fargo's still to come?
On down.
Oops, too late. Already clicked it.
I think it's like 1, 2, 3 more down.
Something went wrong. Just my internet's slow. Oh, here's Mo. Hey, Mo.
There's a storeroom.
Oh, that's an old one.
It's the one from 20 hours ago is the one we're looking for.
20 hours ago?
Yep.
25 minutes ago?
Keep going.
Okay. 21 hours.
Emmett
at the restaurant?
Yes, the one that says you better get your story straight.
Yeah, okay, let's see what that one is. Emmett and Stella? Stella? And Cy.
No, it's Lady Goldfarb, Widow Goldfarb.
Oh, and Emmett can't even hear because his heart's beating in his ears so loud?
Yes.
Cy goes over to talk to the Winnie at the...
Right.
Winnie comes into the restaurant. Emmett's heart's beating faster and faster. He stands up from the Widow Goldfarb's table and looks over at the cop and walks towards her and... Very dramatic, Michelle. His heart's beating louder. Oh, he's finding out about Ray.
Yeah.
I've been here since 6.
Huh? He offers an alibi before he even knows what happened to Ray. What an idiot.
Right. He doesn't even know Ray has been hurt yet. He doesn't know anything. He just walks over and immediately gives his alibi.
All right. So he's going to be steamrolled by Winnie and Gloria for sure.
Yeah, you'd think.
So that doesn't tell us much more about what happens, though, because we know he's an idiot already. We already knew that.
Yeah, but that's bad. I mean, Varga coached him better than that.
Right.
He told him, don't offer anything.
The poor Widow Goldfarb's going to be stuck without a dinner companion. What the hell?
Yeah, well, she's got Cy, but, you know.
You think Cy's going to let Emma just get taken away to the police station and finish his dinner?
You think they're going to take him to the police station from that?
He looks pretty damn suspicious. Wouldn't you, as Winnie, say, we need you to come down and answer a few questions. Your brother was murdered or accidentally stabbed in the neck with a picture frame.
And the whole thing about it is, if he had just called the police, that would have been something that was easily explained. He wouldn't have even necessarily been culpable. He didn't hurt Ray on purpose. Ray was really the one acting crazy. So really, he's bringing all this on him for nothing.
Maybe. It maybe have been able to been explained, but maybe not easily explained. If you and I are fighting over handling a picture, you take it. No, I don't want it. You keep it. No, you keep it. No, you. And then it breaks and it kills you. That's hard to explain.
Yeah, but, you know, you're not even really... fighting, you know, you're like scuffling with it. You're pulling it back and forth. I mean, it's not even like anything big. I don't know. I just thought it would have been, he didn't do that to Ray.
Well, we know that. But I mean, earlier in the episode, we just had Gloria say, are you feuding with your brother?
Yeah.
There's some trouble between them and now one of them's dead. And now, yeah, you're right, he didn't call the police because now he's happily having dinner with a casual acquaintance and it looks like he's just like not, like he left him there. It's a hit and run. I don't know, Michelle. Well, it's inevitable. We're going to find out what happens next week.
Yep. Only 4 more episodes.
All right. I'm at Scathing Tweets. How about you?
I'm at Michelle from TN.
All right, so we'll see you next week, Michelle, at 3:07. You do anything important for Memorial Day?
Not really. Maybe cooking out and stuff? What about you?
Well, I'm going to the airport in Sacramento today to pick up my sister at midnight.
Well, that's nice.
She's a flight attendant, so she gets... she's not a flight attendant, but she's an airline executive now. She was a flight attendant for a long time. So she gets to fly for free, so she has to go, like, where the flights go.
Right.
So when you can get something for free, you never, ever pay for it ever again.
Okay.
So all the flights are full to San Francisco, so I got to go to Sacramento and pick her up.
And y'all going to hang out with your whole family?
Her and my niece. Yeah, we're going to do something here in California.
That's so exciting. I'm so glad. That sounds fun.
So we're doing our, so people don't know it, but we're doing this podcast like way out of sync. It's like middle of the day. We usually do them in the evening.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to get some sleep because I got to, it's a 2-hour drive to Sacramento.
Yeah, so. Well, definitely. Well, you have fun with that. That sounds great.
All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. 3-day holiday.
Absolutely.
Stay out of trouble.
Yep.
All right, Michelle.
Okay, Mike. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.